Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
The swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. I'm letting go, oh God. Letting go, oh God.
And welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Larry Rhodes, Doubter 5. This is WOZO Radio, 103.9 LP FM. We're live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Wombat will not be with us tonight. He had a previous engagement that he had to take off for. And it's going to be carrying the water tonight. I will be talking about some of the articles and things that I have on my blog, digitalfreethought.com. And we'll go into those just here in a second. First, need to talk and, well, say that the Radio Hour, the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, is a call-in talk radio show. It's about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. If you're getting the feeling that you're not the only non-believer in East Tennessee, well, you're right. There are a lot of other free-thinking atheist and rationalist groups that are here in Knoxville and East Tennessee, and we'll tell you how you connect with them after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there's been an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? It has been for, gosh, I guess it's almost 8 years now. And we'll tell you how you can tune into that as well a little bit later on. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there. And you can find a lot of them on Digital Free Thought, digitalfreethought.com. Go to blog and then go to the atheist songs section. I think we have 60 or 70 atheist songs there. And you'll also hear them on the station in rotation. This is January 10th, 2018. If you're not listening on January 10th, then this is a rerun or a podcast. By the way, you can hear our shows in a podcast format by going to freethoughtradio.com. Pretty much all of our, I'm sorry, that's freethoughtradiohour.com. I always forget to leave off the, always forget the hour there. Pretty much all of our old shows are there. And you can download them, play them on your phone, or whatever. One of my pet peeves is when I come across articles by religious leaders who pretend to know how atheists became atheists. They misrepresent the process either through ignorance or malice. It's not easy to tell which, because they're trying to frame the subject for people who themselves are ignorant about it. But they are packaging it for them in their terms, or they are just clueless themselves, I don't know. In his article, Atheism, an Objective Review, Dr. Peregrino Brima, that's B-R-I-M-A-H, claims that people come to atheists due to unanswered prayers or because they are disappointed in God or blame him for some physical or mental injury or disability. Atheists come to atheism because they don't believe that God is real, period. If they didn't, they wouldn't really be atheists, because that is the definition of the word. They don't become atheists because they're mad or disappointed in him. If that were the case, then they would still believe in him. They just wouldn't like him. And if they believe in him, they wouldn't be atheists. See how that works? I stress this because I hear this argument so much. It's the old, why are you mad at God question. Because of their religious mindset, which says everybody believes in God, They can make all kinds of excuses for a person turning their back on God as one would turn their back on a friend, a parent, or a public figure. They just can't seem to grasp the fact that atheists actually come to their lack of belief because they finally understand that there's no God there to believe in, and that the many claims of Christianity and other religions just don't hold water. It seems impossible for them to conceive of people for whom God is simply not there. It would be impossible to blame someone who doesn't exist for doing you harm. Could you blame Poseidon for letting your mother die when you don't believe in him? We simply don't believe that God is there any more than Santa Claus is there or the Sandman. He doesn't exist, period. We can't make it any clearer than that. However, the problem is that instead of actually asking an atheist why they don't believe, people go to the religious leaders for answers. The false reasons that preachers attribute to atheists for their non-belief are called straw man arguments. That is, they misrepresent someone's argument or position because the misrepresented argument is easier to dismantle than the real argument. Preachers and Christian apologists can't successfully refute the actual reasons that someone might come to non-belief, so they create false arguments and present them to their flock as easily refutable, although false, claims by atheists. An example of a straw man argument is this. Quote, to be an atheist, you have to believe with absolute certainty that there is no God. And in order to convince yourself with absolute certainty, you must examine the entire universe and all the places where God could possibly be. And you have to know everything. And since you obviously haven't, your position is indefensible. This is a straw man argument because it misrepresents what atheism is. Atheism is a term that pertains to belief, not knowledge. The above statement, it says incorrectly, that atheists claim that they know that God does not exist. Claiming knowledge that God doesn't exist makes one a Gnostic, since the person making a positive knowledge claim, since this is a person making a positive knowledge claim, not a belief claim. Personally, I'm an agnostic atheist. In other words, I don't know, agnosticism, that there aren't any gods, but I don't believe, atheism, in any. I assume the person making the above strawman argument hasn't examined the entire universe for UFOs, Bigfoots, leprechauns, or fairies, but you don't have to search the entire universe before claiming not to believe in them, especially since there's never been any convincing evidence for their existence. It's the same with God. Another straw man argument that believers put forward for atheists is, atheists don't believe in anything. Well, that's simply not true. Atheists are people. They're humans. And as such, they believe in all sorts of things. Personally, I believe in living a good life, finding fulfilling work. I believe in taking care of my family and helping others. I believe in love and home, reading good books and gathering with friends. And saying that atheists don't believe in anything is dehumanizing. It's a false argument that presents atheists in such a light that it's easier to target them as the other or outsiders. Oprah Winfrey once interviewed Diana Nyad. She's a 64-year-old marathon swimmer who recently swam from Cuba to Florida. Nyad says she was an atheist and she was in awe of the universe and humanity. Winfrey pompously said, well, then I wouldn't call you an atheist then. I think that if you believe in awe and wonder and the mystery of the universe, then that is what God is. That's a straw man argument. Because the straw man concept of atheism that Oprah had in her mind, one that said that atheists can't feel awe and wonder, she essentially called her guest a liar. Again, the straw man argument that Oprah labors under is that atheists are somehow less than human. If someone had asked Oprah before the show if awe and wonder were attributes that all humans shared, I assume she would have said yes. But when presented with a person who says she doesn't believe in God but still felt awe, well, they had to be lying. You wouldn't go to a white supremacist to ask them to explain the black experience to you. And you wouldn't ask an anti-Semite for information about Jews if you wanted good, honest information. So, don't go to a preacher and ask them to explain atheism. That is, if you're interested in getting the truth about us anyway. If you want to know what an atheist is, ask us. We're human and are quite capable of expressing ourselves on the subject. If you don't know what an atheist, if you don't know an atheist personally, then get online and read what they post. You can read actual atheist deconversion testimonies at positiveatheism.org or xchristian.net. And if you want to know more about logical fallacies, such as the straw man argument, and how to construct a logical argument that produces good answers, go to infidels.org and search for their logic page. And that's the end of that article. It's Why Would You Ask a Preacher About Atheists? And you'll find that on my blog at digitalfreethought.com. And it's time for a song now, so I'm going to go back to the song area. I'm going to play one of my favorites. If I can find it here. Why Don't Bees Go to Heaven by Save the Enlightenment. Catchy little tune. I hope you enjoy it and be back in a minute.
It seems to me the species Homo sapiens carries the chutzpah gene. To think they are the purpose of the universe when they only just arrived on the scene. What's even worse, they bear a curse of believing they're the only form of life to never die and go on living somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't bees go to heaven and trees go to heaven? Amoeba, krill and fleas go to heaven. It's not surprising that they're not arising, 'cause man created God.
This grain of sand upon an infinite beach had been supporting life for trillions of spins. Then along came humans who started assuming that this was where it begins.
So profoundly naive, they began to perceive these primates were the only ones to never die and go on living somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't worms go to heaven and germs go to heaven? Spiders, snakes and sperms go to heaven. It's quite expected that they're not resurrected, 'cause man created God.
If man created Zeus
and the god of the sun,
if man created Shiva
and the god of Abraham,
from all of life, why should the only one saved be the
species worst behaved?
Well, that's because that same species, Homo sapiens, carries the chutzpah gene. To think they are the purpose of the universe when they only just arrived on the scene.
What's even worse, they bear a curse of believing they're the only form of life to never die and go on living
somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't whales go to heaven, snails go to heaven, orangutans and quail go to heaven? They don't think twice about paradise, because man created God. So why don't bees go to heaven, and trees go to heaven, amoeba, krill and fleas go to heaven? It's not surprising that they're not arising, 'cause man created God. So why don't worms go to heaven and germs go to heaven? Spiders, snakes and sperms go to heaven. It's quite expected that they're not resurrected, 'cause man created God. So why don't bees go to heaven and trees go to heaven? Amoeba, krill and fleas go to heaven.
And that makes a lot of sense, really. The thing about atheists is we don't believe that hell is real, or heaven, or God, or souls, for that matter. And if souls don't exist, then the whole religion thing is moot. I mean, if there's nothing that stays after you die, then we don't have to worry about places where it's going to go. There are a lot of things that are in Christian claims that just don't stand up. I mean, we've been laboring under the Judeo-Christian belief system for 2,000 years, the Jewish belief system for 2,500 years, and Islam for about, 1,400 years? And none of them, in all of that time, has demonstrated that people have souls. Anyway, that's just something to think about, food for thought. If you'd like to talk about these topics or have some comments about them, you can call here. The line is open. It's 856-333-5937, 856-333-5937. When I talk to believers, it's amazing the reverence they have for the Bible. It's really moving, the emotion that surfaces when they're on that subject. They say it's literally the most important book in history. It's important because it was written or inspired to be written by the creator of the universe and everything in it, including us. And because it carries the most important message in the history of mankind. They go on and on about its poetry, its beauty, its truth, and about all the guidelines it contains for living a good life. But if I can stop them long enough, I'll ask them, how many times have you read it? And more often than not, they say they haven't. I say, what? And they look embarrassed and squirm a little, so I bear down. You've just been telling me that it's the one and only original book of the creator of the universe. It's a book where you say that all your morals come from. And I can't even have morals because I don't subscribe to it. And that it was written by the one person who will make the decision about where you will be spending your eternal life. And you haven't read it? This is the book that you bring to government meetings and demand that we adhere to. This is the book that you claim should keep two loving gay individuals from finding fulfillment in marriage. This is the book that you pound when you make fantastic claims about souls and sin and salvation and the hereafter. And this is the book that you claim this is the book you claim contains complete and total truth without a single contradiction. And you haven't read it. What kind of mental gymnastics does it take to convince yourself that you don't need to read it? You claim to be a Christian. You claim to love and worship the eternal author, and that you converse with him every day. You claim to love him more than anybody else, including your family. You claim that he watches you every moment of the day, every move you make, and every single thought you have, and judges you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for your entire life, every thought that you have. Yet you cannot be bothered to read his book. I know atheists that have read it many times, but you haven't. The next time you pray, you should add a little address. You should at least address this little oversight. Ask God to forgive you for your terrible lack of faith and then get down to reading it. Keep in mind that this is an atheist telling you to read the Bible. Not what you'd expect, I bet. When was the last time your preacher told you to read it? Ever? And you never hear a priest tell you to. Do you ever wonder why not? Could it be that if you did, you might find out that what you hear them preach is a lot different than what you read in it? You know that there are only about 100 stories in the Bible that preachers will preach on any given Sunday. The rest? Well, they're not really ready for polite company. For instance, did you know that God chiseled the Ten Commandments twice? And that they aren't the same commandments? In Exodus 20, 2 through 17, are the ones that you're familiar with. But later in Exodus 34, 6 through 7, he gives another set to replace the first set that was broken by Moses. But they aren't the same. And the second set is the only one referred to in the Bible as the Ten Commandments. God condones, in the Bible, a human sacrifice. In Judges 11 through 12, if you're familiar with the story of Abraham where God commanded him to sacrifice his son but then sent an angel to stop him, But have you heard of the story of Jephthah? An Israelite general makes a promise to God in order to win a battle, the results of which are that he has to make a sacrifice of the first thing that comes out of his home when he returns from battle. And it turns out that his daughter comes dancing with tambours and thimbles, trembles and thimbles, I can't remember the wording, comes out of her house and dances to him, and he rends his clothes because he has realized that he's going to have to sacrifice her. But you'd expect God to stop him like he would Abraham. But that doesn't happen. God doesn't stop him. No, he has to go through with it. So that's an example of human sacrifice in the Bible that you have not read yet. And did you know that Jesus killed a date tree for not having dates when he wanted some? No reason there, just Jesus being PO'd at a tree for not having some fruit, and it was out of season anyway, but he killed it. Mark 11:12-25. Or the story of the prophet Elijah, who, when he was teased by some little children about being bald, cursed them in the name of God, and God sent two bears to rip those children apart, killing 42 children. 2 Kings 2:23-24. Or in Judges 19:22-29, where a mob demands to be able to rape a godly master's guest, but the guest offers his daughter and concubine to them instead. They take the concubine and rape her, and the master finds her dead in the doorstep of the morning. He then cuts her to 12 pieces and sends the pieces to the heads of the 12 tribes. This is in your Bible. Leviticus and Deuteronomy are terrible examples of humanity, and you won't find much humanity in there, matter of fact. Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and Jeremiah, where God threatens to punish Israelites, and by extension us, by making them eat their own children if they don't obey his commandments. And remember that there are 613 commandments in the Bible, not just 10. Deuteronomy and Leviticus are pretty much full of them. And Exodus 9:12. Where Pharaoh is about to release the Israelite slaves, but God hardens his heart, keeping him from doing it. Why would he do that? That's taking away his free will. Apparently, just so God could release his 10 plagues on Egypt and kill the firstborn Egyptian children. The Bible is full of these barbaric and horrific stories. It's your religion. It's what you're trying your best to foster on the rest of us by using the power of government when you vote for your evangelical candidates. Most Christians treat the Bible like a EULA. That's an end user's license agreement. They just scroll the bottom and hit approve. Grow up. Take a little responsibility for your own beliefs and your own actions. Read what you're signing off on. And if what you read really matches up with what you think it does, I would be surprised. And we're going to take another little musical break here. This one I'm going to try to find a scientific one. This is a Poetry of Reality, an anthem for science by the Symphony of Science, and we'll be back in just a few.
Science is the best tool ever devised for understanding how the world works.
Science is a very human form of knowledge. We are always at the brink of the node.
Science is a collaborative enterprise spanning the generations. We remember those who prepared the way, seeing through them also.
If you're scientifically literate, the world looks very different to you, and that understanding empowers you.
There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
We can do science, and with it, we can improve our lives.
There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
The story of humans is a story of ideas that shine light into dark corners.
Scientists love mysteries. They love not knowing.
I don't feel frightened by not knowing things. I think it's much more interesting.
There's a larger universal reality of which we are all a part.
The further we probe into the universe, the more remarkable are the discoveries we make.
The quest for the truth in and of itself is a story that's filled with insights.
There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
We can do science, and with it, we can improve our lives.
There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
The story of humans is a story of ideas that shine light into dark corners.
From our lonely point in the cosmos, we have, through the power of thought, been able to peer back to a brief moment after the beginning of the universe.
I think that science changes the way your mind works, to think a little more deeply about things.
Science replaces private prejudice with publicly verifiable evidence. There's real poetry in the real world. Science is the poetry of reality.
We can do science, and with it, we can improve our lives.
And welcome back. I'm Dr. Five, and this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is January 10th, 2018. By the way, if you're not listening on January 10th, this is a rerun. You can hear some of our old shows on freethoughtradiohour.com. So go there and you can pretty much hear any of our shows from the last couple of years. Okay, let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 15th year. ASK now has nearly 800 members, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org, or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. If you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one? Start one. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening, at West Hills Flats and Taps on Kingston Pike near Westtown Mall, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Matt Dillahunty. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for over 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. But if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. There's also the Sunday Assembly, which started in England a few years ago and now has spread across the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month currently, though, and that's on the fourth Sunday. Then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody likes like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. And let's see. Oh, earlier in the show we said we'd talk about the Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it most every Tuesday. I'm sorry, it's moved. It's now Wednesday. It starts at 6:30 and goes to 7:30, so it's just now going off the air. I need to move this announcement a little earlier in the show. But you can find archives of their shows by going to YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. You can also watch it live online at ctvknox.org every Wednesday at 6:30, ctvknox.org. And if you're interested in becoming involved with the TV show or the radio show, just come to an ASK meetup or an RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. Next topic is Christianity. How good is the evidence? I'm going to go back a few years for this one. In 1998, Lee Strobel wrote a book called The Case for Christ. In it, he frequently states that he used a hard-headed, no-nonsense, skeptical approach to the question of Jesus' resurrection during a time in his life when he was an atheist. But then he goes on to spend the entirety of his book interviewing Christian evangelicals and ministers. Not once did he stray from the pack of people who actively want to sell you belief. He loads the deck in favor of his foregone conclusion. Jeffrey J. Louders states in his article, The Rest of the Story, in 1999, Strobel did not interview any critics of Christian apologetics, even though he attacks such individuals in his book. For example, Strobel devotes an entire chapter of his interview of Greg Boyd, an outspoken fault finder of the Jesus Seminar. Yet Strobel never interviewed a single member of the Jesus Seminar itself. Likewise, he repeatedly criticized Michael Martin, the author of Case Against Christianity, but he never bothered to get Martin's response to any of his attacks. This hardly constitutes balanced reporting on Strobel's part. Indeed, on this basis, one is tempted to dismiss the entire book. All of the above there was Jeffrey Louders in his article, The Rest of the Story. Further, Scott Bidstrup in his article, The Case Against, The Case for Christ, takes exception to his claim that he is an atheist at the time he wrote the book. The book is very cleverly crafted. This book is very cleverly crafted. It is often claimed by the proponents of this book that the author wrote it when he was an atheist and was undergoing the conversion process. This is not true. From a careful reading, see the last two paragraphs at the bottom of page 14, he makes it quite clear that he wrote it as a fully committed Christian, retracing his spiritual path as an indeterminate period of time after the fact. As such, it is yet another ordinary piece of apologetic axe grinding. In addition to articles like Lowers and Bidstrup, there are many books that answer Strobel's claims and speak truth to his interviewees. But Atheism and the Case Against Christ by Matthew S. McCormick actually recreates the arguments against belief in the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the ground up, addressing not only the facts of the claims, but the conditions under which the legend of a resurrected Jesus was created and perpetuated throughout the ages. McCormick takes the reader through the many and varied reasons why it is not reasonable to credit the story of a risen Christ, including, 1, we don't know, indeed, have no way of knowing, who the original authors of the Gospels were and what their motives were for writing those stories down. Many simply copied what the others wrote. We do not know the people who passed them along or how they changed them in the telling. We do know, however, that they had every reason to suppress any evidence against them. Indeed, as preachers, they were in the business of selling belief, and so would actively discard any evidence to the contrary. It is clear in the Gospels and the other early writings that the intent of the author is to spread the good news, to foster belief, to encourage faithfulness, and to keep people strong in believing against the possibility of doubt, and to create new converts. That was a direct quote from Matthew McCormick. And the fact that every person responsible for retelling the story along the millennia had reasons to suppress any evidence against it has to be considered at every stage of the story's progression. The witnesses, the repeaters of the stories, the authors who wrote them down, the copyists, the canonizers. Like Lee Strobel, they may say that they're hard-headed skeptics, but their actions belie that. It's the same reason you don't see your preachers today preaching any reasons for doubt. We don't know anything about the people who edited those documents and what they could have left out. However, we do know of the many Gnostic Gospels and other texts that were not included in the Bible due to the fact that they weren't supportive enough of the accepted scriptures to be included. What other early evidence was conveniently misplaced for the same reason? There are much better cases of supernatural activities that we don't accept. For instance, we all dismiss the well-documented and attested cases from the Salem witch trials, cases in which evidence was given under oath and in front of constables and judges with heaps of depositions about neighbors changing shapes and dancing with the devil. We poo-poo those cases and blindly accept the story of Jesus' resurrection with no contemporary evidence at all. Indeed, with no evidence at all other than the anecdotal evidence in the form of ancient manuscripts written by scientifically illiterate and superstitious peoples. The author also points out that if Jesus of the Bible were actually God on earth, and we believe that the miracles that Jesus performed were actually miracles that an all-powerful, universe-creating God would have performed, then he would be the underachiever of all times. Walking on water, feeding people, healing the sick one at a time, and appearing to raise people from the dead one or two at a time. Please, how about rearranging the stars to spell Jesus Christ in every human language, past, present, and future? How about eradicating hunger? How about creating a Bible that would self-update to explain things that really need explaining, like germ theory or electromagnetic theory or gravity, and explaining them in a way that we could readily understand and use to make our lives better? Or how about coming down to earth to actually help us with our problems, and then doing it for every single generation? McCormick asked the reader how much trust they would put in a doctor who based his medical decisions on data gathered by a nurse who believed that the patient's problem was their diet and supplied the doctor only with information that supported that diagnosis. How much should a district attorney trust a detective who is known to have a particular malice against the person that he is investigating? You should not feel justified in any judgment that does not have evidence, both pro and con, represented. Further, you should certainly not feel comfortable with your own judgments if they are supported only by faith. That is, when you discount all evidence against your view, or even when you never even seek it out, as in the case for Christ's book. Matthew McCormick goes on to say that one problem with faith is that the believer decides to ignore the insufficiency of the historical evidence for their view. Then the criteria they would have to sort between acceptable and unacceptable beliefs would be lost. If the faithful believer deems the historical evidence to be irrelevant, then the floodgates would now be open for a long list of other religious and metaphysical views, and the believer would have no grounds on which to decide what views would be worthy of believing. If the historical facts do not matter, then Islam, Buddhism, Judaism, Mormonism, Zoroastrianism, and a thousand other religions would all be on the same footing. And that possible leveling of the decision field would undermine any special claim that Christianity might have on having the truth. To that point, at our atheist meetups, I have long handed out cards imprinted with the tongue-in-cheek motto, "Faith is incredible. With faith, you can believe anything." My point is the same as McCormick's. Without evidence and reason, ye really can use faith to believe in any religion, any conspiracy theory, or indeed any premise at all. Every preacher of every sect of every religion in the world is telling his congregation that they must have faith that what he is telling them is true. And the time that he says this, why, it's when they are questioning what he is telling them, of course. And that was from my article, Christianity, How Good is the Evidence? And you can find that, of course, at digitalfreethought.com, the blog. And you can go there and find any those and like 60 other articles. Now I'm going to play a song by Shelley Siegel. It's an apocalyptic love song that she dedicated to Hitchens, Christopher Hitchens. Hope you like it. Be back in a minute.
One day the sun is going to die. For us it means no more sunsets to the universe. Just one less star in the sky. And almost all who ever lived have already died. Countless stories of love and war and hope and pain now silent play side by side. Yes, I understand that my whole life is just a blink of an eye in the history of the earth with each moment that goes by. But this moment that I am with you, it feels like time has stood still. It feels somehow like it matters, but it always will. In 1 billion years oceans will dry, while somehow life may continue, it will not be known to you and I. To think we are so important is an obvious crime. We know that we are specks on a tiny dot.
Okay, we're back. This is an atheist talk radio show. Phone number here is 865-333-5937. Phone lines are open if you'd like to call in. But let's say that you have a friend and you find out that they're an atheist. You will very likely hear them state that your religious beliefs are not credible if you're a Christian. Your loved one is now a non-believer, your friend. Basically because they can no longer make themselves accept the claims that your religion puts forward as true. Many believers think that atheists choose to deny God because they don't want to live under the strictures of that religion anymore. They think that the apostate simply enjoys sinning and just wants to go where the fun is. I suppose for a few shallow individuals that might be the case. But those people will quickly return to the fold due to the fact that they still believe that God is real, is watching them, and will punish them for their actions. However, for the vast majority of atheists, that is simply not the case. They have come to the realization that they can't believe the fantastic stories anymore. Atheism is not a choice or a rebellion. It is a realization. It's a conclusion. Let us not lose sight of the fact that even the most basic tenets of Christian religious beliefs are unproven, and that we are told we must take them on faith, that is, without proof or evidence. Indeed, as discussed in earlier, if they could be proven or if there were evidence, they wouldn't require faith, would they? Here we'll closely look at the basic beliefs of the predominant religion of America, Christianity. We'll break it down. Most Christians claim all of them are real and expect us to accept them. Yet they present no evidence for any of them, much less have they been shown to be scientifically documented fact. Remember, the Bible is not proof of these claims. The Bible is the claim. Christians are just reiterating those claims. Christianity, and indeed Islam, have yet to prove that souls exist and that every person has one. Now, when you say soul, you have to go in even farther. You have to prove that souls can and do contain our mind, memories, and identity independent of the brain. They have not proven that they exist or that it even has a property. They have to prove that souls do indeed survive the death of our bodies intact, and that they will continue to live on for an eternity. Never has any of that been demonstrated to be true. They also have to demonstrate that there are places for souls to go after death, that the specific places, heaven and hell, actually exist, and each one would have to be separately proven. Yet, they have never been proven in 2,000 or more than 2,000 years. They haven't even demonstrated that anything supernatural exists, that any kind of supernatural intelligence exists, that any such supernatural intelligent being is capable of interacting with the natural universe at all. I mean, how can a supernatural interact with the natural? Never been demonstrated, never had any evidence even been put forward for that. They have never demonstrated that the universe was actually created by such a supernatural intelligence. Again, that is simply a claim that the Bible puts out and Christians repeat. Never been demonstrated, never been proven, no evidence. They've never demonstrated that these supernatural beings are actually gods, as we understand the word, and not just aliens that can manipulate advanced technology. They have never demonstrated that one of those gods is actually the God of Christianity, Yahweh, that he could be the God of Islam, or the God of, or the gods, excuse me, of Hinduism. And they've never demonstrated that he is the only God. Even in Genesis, God uses the word we, referring to other gods. And they have never proven outside, I mean, remember, the Bible is a claim, not evidence. They have never showed any evidence or proof that God of the Bible created man without ancestry, thereby proving that evolution isn't real. They haven't proven that mental telepathy, prayer, is real. They have not proven or even demonstrated or provided evidence that Yahweh is the God and actually is listening to our prayers or cares. We have no idea, because we've never had a God to examine in the past, ever. Never has one stepped forward. They've never demonstrated that any kind of magic or miracles is real. That is, that God or Jesus or the prophets or anyone can say words and bend the laws of physics to make things come into existence. Christians make claims, but they never have demonstrated that miracles or prophecy is real and actually took place. And if so, that they were gifts from Yahweh, all of which have to be demonstrated with evidence to prove that they actually happened, that they're real. Never have they proven that the specific magical beings in the Bible, angels, demons, Satan, cherubim, the talking serpents, etc., are real or have ever existed, and that the stories about them in the Bible are true. All of these require evidence. They are simply claims and stories, anecdotal evidence. They've never proven that sin exists and that we need salvation from it. That's just another claim. Sin is a problem that the church sells you in order to sell you the cure. They've never demonstrated that we must be saved from sin by the simple act of believing. I call it the Tinkerbell effect. Or that we can be saved at all, if it's actually real. They've never proven, never shown demonstration that fruit can actually hold the knowledge of good or evil, or any abstract knowledge for that matter, and can transfer it to the one who eats it. That's an interesting story, but it's just another simple claim that the Bible puts forward, Christians repeat, no evidence, and certainly not demonstrated. Another claim is that supernatural beings are capable of having a child by a human mother. Never been demonstrated, we've never demonstrated that anything supernatural exists, period. Yet they put forward that this claim, that this supernatural being told this woman that she was going to have his child, and he did, and that's simply a claim, anecdotal story that we are demanded to believe. And even if that were true, we have no proof that that child was indeed the Jesus of the Bible. That would have to be demonstrated. We can't even demonstrate that conclusively that he actually existed. But yet, they claim that he did exist and he was a God. He was Jesus of the Bible. We're up to claim number 24, by the way. Claim number 25, the last in my article, is that Jesus was the one prophesied as the Christ. Even Jews who believe most of these other claims do not believe that. So again, it's another simple claim Christians put forward, and we are expected to believe, nay, demanded to believe. Maybe if you could prove each and every step of this chain of claims to be an unimpeachable fact, then belief in the Christian story could be warranted. Before you can use any of the things mentioned above in an argument, that is, like, if you don't believe in God and ask Jesus Christ to forgive your sins, you'll go to hell. Well, there's like four things in there. There's God, there's Jesus, five things. There's Christ, which is a title, there's sin, and there's hell. That one sentence contained five things that require evidence and need to be demonstrated to be true, but we just hear it and we accept it and go on. Examine your beliefs. Examine each part of these things and demand evidence for them. You really have to demonstrate that those several independent things are real and that the claim as a whole is true. Remember, the burden of proof is on the one making the claims, not those who simply say they don't believe it. We'll talk more about burden of proof in later shows. The Bible itself is proof of none of this. You can't use the Bible to prove the Bible. If that were true, then every holy book, or indeed any book, even Harry Potter, could prove itself to be true simply by stating that it was true in the book. You may now say that it's up to me, the unbeliever, to disprove all of those things. Nope. Not the case. Not how it works. The problem is that religion makes positive claims about the universe, life, the afterlife, and salvation, and tells us that we have to believe it on pain of eternal punishment. Saying that atheist has to disprove all of this is not addressing the simple point here. Christians are claiming that it's all true, and atheists aren't saying, no, it's not. We're simply saying, sorry, I can't believe that. There's a big difference here. There's very specific claims in which we are expected to accept without any hard evidence. And not all claims are equal. Carl Sagan once said, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. If you claim that you just bought a new puppy and you brought him home as a pet, I would probably accept your claim without evidence because I know puppies are real, I know people buy them and take them home, pets all the time, and it wouldn't hurt me to believe that your claim were true, even if it were false. But if you were to tell me that I had to run into a burning building to save your pet dragon, I would have some serious reservations about believing it, and would have some very pointed questions about your statement. I would also have every right to demand evidence, if not indisputable proof, before accepting it as true and acting upon it. Compare that to what you claim, that my soul is damned to suffer for eternity in hell if I don't believe as you do, and that I must accept everything in your holy book as true and give 10% of my income to your organization. Again, I would want to see some proof to back that up. And if I say, sorry, I don't buy it, It is quite unreasonable for you to ask me to disprove your claims. Sorry. Religions all down through history have been making fantastic claims around the world and demanding that everyone believe them. And they claim that if we don't believe them, something terrible will happen to us. Sorry, those days are over. Note, I've addressed this chapter to Christians, but if you are a different faith, and your belief system is also dependent upon the same basic concept of where your soul will be spending the afterlife, well, maybe you should examine your beliefs a bit closer as well. Not just the main story or the takeaway message, but the minutiae of the beliefs themselves, as I have numbered them above. Break them down and ask the hard questions. Demand proof before you invest your time, money, and efforts in them. And especially before you pass those unexamined beliefs along to your children and their children. Okay, that was Examine Your Beliefs, an article on digitalfreethought.com blog. And I'm going to try to play one more song before we go, see what I can find real quick. Let's see. How about... We Don't Go to God's House Anymore. That sounds reasonable for our show. So here we go. Be back in about 3.
Are you going to a dance?
No, Mom. It's just a movie date.
Oh. Your father and I have no objections to church or school-sponsored dances, but we surely don't want you going to any of those local places like that cuckoo club.